I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hi folks, welcome to episode 90 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Bo, as always, and we are going to be talking about the least likely emperor, Claudius. How did he survive? Actually, I already know, we talked about it last week.
Because people thought he was an imbecile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he really wasn't.
No. But you know, smart.
Yeah, Uncle Claw, he comes back into the story because he's like 50-odd years old when he becomes emperor. So we're actually going back a generation, essentially. Mm. A lot of the figures, a lot of the people that were involved in the story of Augustus and Tiberius sort of come back into the story a bit.
Yeah, because Caligula's, what, 29 or something when he dies?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so he's really young.
Yeah.
And he's murdered, obviously. Yeah. So yeah, Claudius is just like, God, how has this fallen on my shoulders, right?
Yeah.
This is the last thing I was expecting.
Yeah. It comes out of nowhere. And he was sort of a Republican as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We'll get into it. But he was very reluctant. Some people said Tiberius was like a reluctant emperor. Hmm. Well, Claudius really was.
Right.
It would explicitly say, I never wanted this. It was a mistake that I ever became emperor. He would say that, which is dangerous.
Yeah.
Because the army or the Praetorian Guard or Caligula's German Guard, they would... It's life and death to them.
Well, it's their careers. They're standing in Rome.
Well, we'll get into the story of exactly. Suetonius calls it an accident. He became emperor by accident. Mm. And we'll get into that shortly after I do a little bit on his early life.
Sure.
And stuff like that.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right. So the main sources again are Tacitus and Suetonius. His early life, he was born with some, it's not really exactly clear what, but some actual physical defects. Mm. Whether he had a type of hunchback or a club foot or something. It's not exactly. He also stammered, had difficulty speaking clearly. Mm. But his mind was perfectly sharp.
So just a quick note on that. I think it's worth pointing out why this is important and why this would have had an impact on Claudius's life. Because as I understand it, in the ancient world, sacred spaces required you to have no physical deformities. So, isn't it in the Old Testament where a man who's been castrated can't go into a sacred temple?
I don't know. So
I'm pretty sure it is.
About right,
and the Romans had the same thing sort of thing with their rites. And there was the famous what was the name of that guy who had loads of limbs hacked off, and they wanted to disbar him from the sacrifices.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you know,
I don't know that
you,
one.
You do know the guy. You definitely know him.
This in
guy,
Roman history.
Yeah, in Roman history. There's this guy who'd been at like dozens of battles in the late Republic, and he'd like lost an arm. He'd, you know, he'd been wounded all over, and they were like, "No, you can't come in. You're a cripple." And he's like, "Mate, you know, I was missing both hands when I was at the siege of Alesia or something." I'll find the name of the guy because he was just not having it. But the point is, physical imperfection was seen as a reflection of spiritual imperfection, and if you were born deformed, then you were considered essentially cursed by the gods.
Yeah.
So Claudius being born with some kind of physical deformity would have set him back, shall we say, would create a lot of prejudice against him just on the nature of that.
The gods or the cosmos made you imperfect.
Yeah.
Deliberately.
And it's there's a moral reflection in your physical imperfection.
Yeah, right.
That's what they derive from it. Obviously, it's unfair.
I mean, some people still hold that view today.
Yeah.
You know, is it Glenn Hoddle thought people that are in wheelchairs of paying for sins from a previous life?
It's a bit harsh.
Yeah. Well, he lost the England manager job over that. I mean, in the Middle Ages, people definitely thought, even in the Byzantine period, they would cut your nose or ears off because then you definitely couldn't be emperor.
Yeah.
Because you're deformed. So you cannot be. Yeah, so in the classical world, certainly.
It's ancient, and an ancient prejudice that people have essentially always held. And so this can't have been easy for Claudius.
Mm. Mm. Yeah,
even being part of like a noble and the most important aristocratic family, he's still deformed, though.
His own mother, Antonia, was supposed to have said of him, and this is a quote, that he is a monster, a man whom nature had begun to work upon, but then flung aside.
Thanks, Mum.
And this quote from Suetonius goes on. And if she ever accused someone of stupidity, she would claim, he is a bigger fool even than my son Claudius. And he, again, his mind was absolutely fine.
Yeah, he wasn't stupid.
Not at all. In fact, he was quite precocious. Yeah. From an early age, he would write. He wrote a lot. And into adulthood, like I say, doesn't come emperor until he's about 50.
Yeah.
Through his adulthood, he wrote loads and loads of things.
Right.
Histories.
So he's actually a clever chap.
Right. He wrote treatises on flowers. On gambling, he loved to gamble. Lots of Romans did.
Yeah.
But he wrote histories. Apparently, he would talk a lot to Livy, the Livy,
really?
About writing histories.
Really?
Yeah. And so he's very, very, very well read.
Yeah.
But apparently, he did stammer quite heavily and couldn't really get things out.
It's really unfortunate for him. You know? Obviously, it's unfortunate that you're born deformed, but like, you know, that he's in a time of such unbelievable prejudice about the thing.
Mm. Mm, mm. Tom Holland says that the whole of his childhood and youth was so troubled by various diseases that he grew dull-witted and had little physical strength. And on reaching the age at which he should have won magistracy or chosen a private career, he was considered by his family incapable of doing either. Sorry, that wasn't Tom Holland, that was Suetonius again saying that.
Right.
So they just saw it as, like, he's an embarrassment and he... There's something wrong with his mind, and there sort of wasn't. In Tacitus and Suetonius, they talk a lot about how, when he was a small child, because he was born in like 10 BC, how Livia and Augustus, the head of the Julio-Claudian family, would discuss, and Suetonius even quotes letters they sent to each other, saying, what are we going to do about Claudius? He's not completely hopeless, but he is an embarrassment. What are we going to do? And Augustus was often like, let's wait till he grows up a bit and see. And then they sort of decide, well, we won't let him be in the royal the royal box at the theatre or the circus, but we'll allow him to sort of trail behind on like on processions, royal imperial processions.
Feeling really bad for Claudius.
Yeah.
I really feel bad for this. What a horrible situation to be born into.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Although it does save him during the tyrannies of Tiberius and Caligula.
Sure. Fair enough. There are upsides to it too, but that must have just felt horrible for this lad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Livia. I didn't
want to be born this way.
Livia, the matriarch of the family, apparently always treated him with, quote, the deepest scorn. And she would just send him, quote, brief and bitter messages, just little missives sent to him, being really horrible.
Claudius, I hate you.
Robert Graves's I, Claudius and Claudius the God. There's two books of which they made a 70s TV adaptation with Derek Jacobi as Claudius. In that, they show it quite well that Livia's just really horrible to him. It's like just really, really mean and insulting. And when he goes to say something back, she's just dismissive. Just get away. Just go away. Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Well, lots of people, again, even some people today,
yeah.
do think that if you're physically deformed in any way, that you're just beneath contempt.
Sure, but you can't treat your own children this way.
We don't think that much in the West, but in other places in the world,
you're
untouchable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've.
Right.
We're naming no places.
Yeah. They shall remain Africa, unnamed. Asia. but then when when Tiberius, because he was a child really through, or yeah. teenager through the reign of, it's a young man anyway, through the reign of Tiberius, he was sort of, Tiberius just didn't really want much, really anything to do with him.
No.
He was just sidelined, just keep him quiet, keep him out of the way. And then both Tiberius and Augustus in their will named him as an heir in the third degree, which is like, it's like a friend of a friend of the family sort of a thing. Someone you might barely know, but you want to sort of give a trinket to in your will. That's what they did with Claudius.
Well, I mean, at least they kept him alive.
Right.
There is that. He probably was aware of that as well.
And he was just the butt of jokes a lot. Mm. And so during Caligula's reign, which as we know is only less than 4 years, Caligula loved to humiliate him, take the mickey out of him. Loved it. did it loads. Gave him 2 consulships, but they were like, that was a joke. That was a joke on the Senate. Like the way he made Incitatus his horse a senator.
It's a way of humiliating the Senate.
If I make Uncle Claudius a consul, that's a joke on the Senate.
I'm really feeling for Claudius at this point. I'm very sympathetic to him now. Right, okay, so...
Well, Suetonius says, this is during the reign of Caligula, whenever he nodded off after dinner, as he often did, the company would pelt him with olives and date stones. Again, it's like a senior member of the imperial family. Some jokesters exercised their wit by putting slippers on his hands as he lay snoring and then gave him a sudden blow with a whip or a cane to wake him so that he rubbed his eyes with them.
Oh, hilarious.
That classic trick.
Yeah.
Ever seen people put shaving foam in the sleeping person's hand and tickle their nose?
Yeah.
So they did that in the ancient world. Yeah. One time Caligula had ordered some statues of his older brothers who had been murdered by Tiberius and gave that job to Claudius, and they didn't come quick enough for Caligula, and he was mad, like almost killed Claudius over that. One time when Caligula was out in Germany, the Senate sent Claudius out to give him a message or something, and Caligula took that as an insult that they would send the imbecile Claudius to him as an envoy. So he had Claudius thrown in the Rhine, fully clothed, head first into the Rhine. Could kill you easily. Most people couldn't swim in the ancient world.
Yeah, I guess Claudius could. I mean,
well, I guess so. He didn't kill him. Once you remember, I told you that Caligula turned one of the palaces on the Palatine into an actual brothel.
Yeah,
he made Claudius the doorman. It is quite funny if you're really cruel and you're trying to humiliate people. That is actually kind of funny.
It is just so awful. Being just the thing on the bottom of everyone's shoe.
Mm.
You know, poor old, and like you say, he's not stupid. Mm. But he's obviously feigning stupidity, because otherwise they're probably going to just kill him. I'm surprised they didn't kill him as a child, to be honest.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been beyond them at all.
No.
So it's, this is sad. This is really sad. Okay.
However, he does get, as we know already, otherwise we probably won't be doing a whole epochs on him, he does get his time to shine.
Good.
You know, because, well, he becomes emperor. As we mentioned in the...
I'm trying to think of a modern parallel, you know, like who is there that's treated this way in the modern world and then put them in charge and everyone be like, what, how is it that guy? I used to put slippers on his hands and then whip him to make him rub his own eyes with slippers. He's in charge.
I suppose there's all sorts of unlikely rulers throughout history, aren't there? I can't think of any like today, because it doesn't really work. It's not really like that today, but there's all sorts of unlikely rulers where all their older siblings died and they end up being the one. But Claudius is just a great example of it. I mean, he's Uncle Claudius, he's the uncle of Caligula. So he's quite often, you know, called Uncle Claudius.
Mm.
Just before I go on to his, how he becomes emperor, exactly the details of it, just to mention that he was the son of Drusus, who was the brother of Tiberius, who accidentally fell off his horse out in Germany that time.
Crushed,
And so Claudius's older brother is Germanicus, the great Germanicus. So that was his brother.
It's not like it's not like he isn't incredibly well connected. It's wild how they could stand to have a member of the royal, the imperial family treated in such an ignoble way, even though he's, you know, deformed. It's just mad.
Well, one thing I'll say is that if he was sitting down, sitting still and not saying anything, apparently you could convince yourself that he was an emperor type. So he's quite tall. Had sort of, his face wasn't disfigured particularly.
Right.
And so as if he didn't say anything and he didn't sort of stand up and lope around, you could sort of convince yourself he might be an emperor type.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's an interesting.
Right.
But was there a problem with his speaking?
Mm.
Like he could, oh yeah, yeah. He stuttered, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right.
In the 1970s TV adaptation of I, Claudius, where Derek Jacobi, it's quite over the top. He has him a heavy stutterer.
Right.
Apparently, the sources say that if he was delivering a speech or if he was reading from something, which is quite often the way I think with people with stammers, if he's reading something or something's rehearsed, he can just deliver it fine.
Right.
It's when he's speaking off the cuff or any sort of pressure, that's when the stutter gets mad, gets crazy.
Right. Fair enough.
I think it's the way. So, the story of where the assassins killed Caligula, they didn't really have a clear plan of what they were going to do next, other than, we're told, that Cassius Chaerea and the Praetorian Guard did plan to kill the entire royal family. That was sort of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, including Claudius.
Yeah.
But Claudius sort of, well, he hides, and he's found, obviously, by a contingent of the Praetorian Guard who weren't in on it.
Right, right.
So it's just luck, really. It is like an accident.
Yeah, yeah.
So another thing to mention is there's the Praetorian Guard, but then also Caligula had his own hand-picked German bodyguard.
Right.
Who apparently were all massive giants, sort of giant guys, and completely out of control. They would do as they're told. They would do what Caligula told them. But other than that, they took no orders from anybody, particularly the Praetorian Guard. The Praetorian Guard were worried about them. How are we going to assassinate Caligula? How are we going to separate him from his German guard?
Yeah.
And then what are we going to do about the German guard once they realise their man has been murdered?
Mm.
They're going to run amok. Mm. So there's that to deal with.
Yeah.
So I've got a few lines here.
It's interesting. That's a parallel with like the Varangian guard later on, isn't it? Where it's like, okay, we've got these giant like Germanics who are ultra loyal to the emperor himself and no one else has any claim on. What do you do about that? It's like, well, stay away from him. I mean, you know,
yeah.
What do you want?
Be very wary of them. Yeah. What else can you do? Yeah. Sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
A quick word then I also say about the Praetorian Guard, just very quickly, is that famously in the age of Julius Caesar and Pompey and Marius and Sulla and all that, Rome was completely demilitarized. You weren't allowed any legionaries, any soldiers in Rome at all. The very, very senior magistrates might have some lictors who are like personal bodyguards, but again, very few of them, like two of them or six of them. That's it. Basically, Rome.
It's not a legion.
There's no soldiers in Rome at all. So, but actually, that gave rise to mobs.
Yeah.
So
factional violence.
Clodius and Milo, again in the age of Caesar and Pompey, had mobs.
Mm.
So when Augustus, the new world, the new settlement, as dictated by Augustus, what he does is very quietly, like very slowly and quietly, introduce a small number of soldiers, Praetorian Guard, into Rome. They didn't have any sort of headquarters or camp in Rome or on the Campus Martius or anything like that.
They're probably just stationed in the palace, right?
Right. He had a small number of guard soldiers in the Palatine, in his houses, to guard his person. Now, during Tiberius's reign, which is over 20 years long, during his reign, Tiberius and during the de facto reign of Sejanus, that changes.
Right.
They're not pretending there's no such thing as the Praetorian Guard anymore. And they build a massive barracks inside Rome.
Right.
The Praetorian camp inside the city walls. And they're just openly guarding the princeps's person wherever he goes and all that sort of thing. And they're sort of known their pay.
Yeah.
It's one of the great things. If you were in the Roman army, if you could get a job in the Praetorians, well, that's great. You get paid loads more.
And that's your retirement, basically. You know,
you have to do a lot less work. You get paid loads more. It's just great.
So much fewer dangers.
Yeah.
You know, you're not on the frontiers like fighting barbarians every day. No, you're in Rome, lording it over the rest of the Romans.
And you're highly respected.
You get paid a fortune.
Yeah, get paid a lot. donatives, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that's not including bribes.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, corruption. You would have made out very well.
Yeah, it's a cushy job that everyone in the army would have wanted, probably. Okay, so by the death of Caligula, the Praetorians are an absolute force. Mm. In fact, it's not lost on many historians.
Well, they are the force. Right, that's the problem.
Does ultimate power lie with them?
Well, if they can just murder an emperor and then put a new one in, yeah, it does. Right. And this is something that we see throughout the course of Roman history. If you don't bribe off the Praetorians, they're just going to kill you and replace you with someone else.
And this is where it first happens.
Yes.
With Claudius. So one thing to mention, if he's the son of Drusus, who's a son of Livia, but not of Augustus, so he's in the imperial family, he's right at the heart of power, but he's not a blood relation of Augustus.
Mm.
See? He's a Claudian.
Yeah.
He's
a
Claudian.
But he's not Julio.
Right. Yeah. So he's not a blood relation of Augustus. And there are people around that are still.
Right.
So...
What I found interesting about the Praetorian Guard is the way that it formed. It seems to lack a kind of tradition and proper place in Roman society, right? As in...
Quite new.
Yeah, it's brand new, and they are incredibly powerful. And what's the check on their power? What's their own moral check on their power? You know, they don't know what they're actually supposed to be doing because a mad tyrant created them. So, well, are we not here to just madly tyrannize? And, you know, it's the distinction between, like, again, I keep bringing it back to Britain because there's just no way that the bare-hatted Queen's Guard would be playing Kingmaker.
Like the Coldstream Guard is just going to murder Prince Charles in his sleep.
It's just
because they prefer wills.
It's inconceivable, you know, because of the strength of the tradition in which these people live and the moral commitment they have to it. Whereas, of course, you know, the Praetorian Guard is brand new. There is no tradition. There is no moral commitment. And so this isn't wrong. You know, it's, well, yeah, this is what we can do. Therefore, we will do. And it, again, just like we don't realize how lucky we were in Britain, I think. Like we're just comparing, you know, anywhere else to what we had. It's just, that's just never going to happen. It's just never going to happen. There's no future in which they said the Coldstream Guard, like, bump off Charles and impose William on the poppy. It's comical.
Because William promised them three years' pay.
Yeah, yeah, it's just comical. You know, it could never happen. And so, and if it does happen, I'm proven wrong. I'm like, fair enough.
I'll eat my hat. Yeah,
I will eat my hat, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, the Blues and Royals march on Parliament.
It's
just not going to happen. Yeah.
Sadly, you know.
But the transition of power between Caligula and Claudius, all this plays out. So wait, who is, where is the cockpit of power? Who actually controls things? It might not even be the head of the Praetorians.
Yeah, there could be a conspiracy within the Praetorians, right?
There could be different factions within the Praetorians. Mm. Well, that is what happens. If I read a few lines then from Suetonius, I've cut out all the fat here. So it's a few different quotes. So if I read it. Suetonius wrote, having spent the better part of his life in circumstances such as these, i.e. being bullied and browbeaten and the butt of jokes, Claudius became emperor at the age of 50 by an extraordinary accident. And then after Caligula is killed, but he soon heard about the murder and slipped away in alarm to a nearby balcony where he hid trembling behind the door curtains. A common soldier who happened to be running past noticed a pair of feet beneath the curtain, pulled their owner out for identification and recognized him. Claudius dropped to the floor and clasped the soldier's knees, but found himself proclaimed emperor.
I mean, that is comical.
So, because we know that he ends up being emperor for 14 odd years or something, that common soldier made that call.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean,
it was just a common Praetorian soldier.
Well, this is the sort of thing the army did all the time. Oh, we're going to proclaim whoever it is emperor. And this happens all the time. Loads of civil war. Well, you know, civil wars, I suppose, a bit strong, but like, you know, loads of uprisings through the army happened throughout the course of the Roman Empire itself.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
It happens all the time. You know, you won a victory on the Rhine. Great, we're going to proclaim you emperor. So that's how it works. Actually, that's exactly how it works. You know, going to march back on Rome now. It's like, oh, I guess I have to.
In later generations, later centuries, the Praetorians would kill and proclaim man after man after man. Yeah, if people don't know that,
And, people,
and this is just the first time it plays
out. We'll have to do that at some point. Yeah. Like, who's the guy who's like, what evil have I committed? Like,
there's quite a lot.
There's just one particular one where he's like, he's emperor for like a month and then they just kill him. And he's like, but what evil have I committed? And it's like, it doesn't matter. You bought the throne. That's the problem. You know, but anyway.
In the Year of the Four Emperors, one of them.
Yeah, it's one of those.
So it wouldn't be Galba, Otho, Vitellius. No. I can't remember which one.
It's quite a, you know, an unknown one because he's literally an emperor for like a month.
There's some stories where the Praetorians will proclaim their general emperor and like that same day or like a day later, they'll realise they haven't really got the momentum or something with them. Right. So to hush the whole thing up, they'll just murder him and pretend they never proclaimed him.
Yeah, proclaim who emperor? Gets silly, I've never heard of the guy. Do I know? Where is he? Can't
What's an emperor? Him? Yeah, I know. we didn't do nothing, Gov, honest. Yeah.
Don't know where he is, you know.
But so here, if Claudius had been found by one of the Praetorians who was in on it, if Cassius Chaerea himself had found him behind that curtain, he would have run him through.
Yeah.
So it is sort of an accident. It's accidental that he managed to survive.
God, the conspirators must have been like, what's going on over there? Oh, look, everyone's cheering. Well, let's go find out what's going on. Oh, they've hailed Claudius as emperor? Damn.
Yeah.
How has that happened? Yeah.
Kind of needed him dead.
Yeah, idiots.
Yeah. Suetonius goes on. They then carried the Praetorians, this faction of the Praetorians, carried him off to their camp, still in Rome. And Suetonius tells us, Claudius looked at the picture of terror and despair.
Poor old Claudius.
Yeah. the picture of terror and despair in his passage through the streets. Everyone cast him pitying glances as if he were an innocent man being hurried to execution.
That's because that's what it feels like, you know? Like, I could totally feel Claudius's perspective on this. I just wanted to read books. Poor old Claudius.
Because it is de rigueur, it is par for the course that he could expect the entire imperial family to be murdered at this point.
They've just murdered the emperor. Why wouldn't I think that I was about to be murdered?
But so the thing is, I think I mentioned it right at the end of the last one, that in the minds of at least some Praetorians, probably the majority of them, that our whole position, our whole way to remain Praetorians is that we need an emperor. If the Republic's restored, they'll do away with the Praetorian Guard, probably. Yeah. So we need an emperor, whoever...
The Praetorians would have to enact some sort of actual military junta in Rome, because their entire legitimacy rests on the emperor.
And even if it's the deformed, dim-witted Uncle Claw, we're still going to...
We need our emperor.
We need an emperor, right. And to stop the Germans from going berserk.
Yeah.
They're going to want another emperor.
Yeah.
And they're going to want a donative.
Yeah.
We need an emperor. We need an emperor. So that's their thinking.
It's actually kind of comical, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got the Romans thought of the Germans as giants anyway, because on average they would have been just taller than the average Roman.
Like a yard taller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally like, you know, a yard taller. And it's just like, And the Germans were considered to be sort of semi-mystical as well. They were like really foreign, really weird.
Extremely barbaric.
You know, they shave their heads in weird ways, and like the Swabian knot still exists. Like, we've got corpses with the weird knot in the hair. They're so un-Roman and like massive and scary.
Almost otherworldly.
Yeah.
And Caligula had picked particularly massive guys.
Yeah.
They're particularly big, even for the Germans. Yeah. So they were like giants.
Yeah.
And they're going to go mad if they don't have another emperor to pay them.
There's a few, I don't know, what, like a dozen or two dozen of these? Like,
there's quite a lot of them.
Oh, are they?
I think that I don't know the numbers. I don't think the source say the exact numbers, but you can get the impression it's dozens and dozens. Because otherwise the Praetorians probably could just kill them all. But they can't really. It seems like there's a real power struggle.
Oh, really?
And that's the thing. This day or over the next few days, it's really, there's this really odd power struggle. Who is... Because the Senate try and, I'll get to it in a sec, but the Senate try and wrestle real power and control back for themselves.
We're the Senate. Are we important? No, you're not important. Shut up.
So is it the Senate? Is it the Praetorian Guards? Is it the Germans? Is it Claudius? Is it the imperial family still? It's all up in the air. Mm.
And Claudius really is the only one with any kind of actual claim here, right? So the Senate kind of has abdicated their decision-making ability generations ago. Yeah. No one respects them.
Yeah.
It's just Claudius.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Suetonius goes on to say, this, the consuls, with the approval of the Senate, because they were still consuls, and the aid of the urban cohorts. So again, another type of city guard.
Yeah.
They were another faction, had seized the Forum and the Capitol and were determined on restoring the Republic.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm in favour, to be honest.
Yeah. They sent a letter to the camp because they know, his word goes round, that Claudius has been taken hostage of a type in the Praetorian camp. So they sent him a letter saying, come down to the Senate House. We're restoring the Republic, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Claudius writes back to them and we're told, Claudius replied that he was being forcibly detained and could not come.
And then this is also comical to me.
Mm.
Like, Claudius is like, well, I'd love to.
Yeah, and I think he would. He genuinely would.
I'd love to get out of this, but they won't let me leave and they're telling me I'm in charge.
Apparently people were in his ear saying, look, you are a hostage of ours, but also if you give the senators back, if you try and let them restore the Republic, whoever ends up winning that power struggle will certainly have you murdered and the remaining members of your family.
Oh yeah.
So you've got to be emperor, otherwise it's a death warrant for you.
Yeah.
And us.
Yeah. And also we're the guys with the swords who are going to make you do this.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it might be a death sentence if you just say no to me now. Like, what is comical? It's genuinely comical.
It's a farce.
Yeah, it is a farce. Yeah.
The transition between Caligula and Claudius is a farce. Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was ridiculous, though. But I didn't realize it was this ridiculous.
It's interesting, though.
Oh, yeah, it's fascinating.
One more quick line from Suetonius on that. He says, meanwhile, crowds surrounding the surrounded the building, the Senate House, and demanded a single ruler, expressly calling for Claudius. At last, he allowed the soldiers to swear allegiance to him and promised every man 15,000 sesterces, which made him the first of the Caesars to purchase the loyalty of his troops.
Right. Because that's a lot of money as well.
Yeah. That bankrupted him.
Yeah. That's a huge amount.
To do that.
Yeah. I mean, how big was the Praetorian Guard? Like 5,000 men?
A few thousand, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's a huge amount of money. It's crazy.
We're told that in Tiberius's will, I think it was Tiberius's will, he gets a mere trifle, a mere tiny, tiny bit of money, but it was 800,000 sesterces.
Right, right.
So, okay. but nevertheless, we're told that completely bankrupts him.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because also Caligula swindled loads of money out of Uncle Claudius whenever he could for a laugh.
Of course he did.
So for the first few years of Claudius's reign, he struggles for money.
Yeah.
A big part of it was because of that. But where he was into gambling, famously into gambling, wrote a treatise about gambling. Tom Holland says that... this is a big gamble. The biggest gamble of his life is to sort of accept it, accept the imperial diadem.
I mean, what choice does he have?
He hasn't got much of a choice.
He's literally being press ganged into it by a bunch of soldiers.
Mm.
He doesn't have any choice.
But Tom Holland says, not since Julius Caesar's crossing of the Rubicon, or never before had there been such a blatant military coup.
Yeah.
So that's spot on, in my opinion.
So, but Claudius is just thinking, how can I escape to the countryside?
Yeah.
Just have to get out of this.
Yeah. Also, Tom Holland in Dynasty. I've got a few quotes from him in this epoch because he's great. He said, a man less qualified to receive such a salute, the imperial salute, than the sickly and decidedly civilian Claudius, it would have been hard to imagine, of course. But that had not prevented the Praetorians from bundling him in a litter, abducting him to their camp, and there, en masse, endowing him with the supreme power.
It's just mad. Just mad.
But where Claudius had been sort of the butt of jokes his whole life, apparently he was quite sensitive to other people's humiliation and things. Mm. Sort of the opposite of Caligula in that way.
Well,
he sort of went out of his way to not rub it in people's faces.
Well, he knows how it feels.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'm not surprised he's an empathetic man after being treated the way he's been treated his whole life.
He was, quote, sensitive to the dignity of others. Yeah. So again, a welcome release from Caligula.
I assume that he doesn't become an insane tyrant.
No.
Good.
There's elements of tyranny to what he does, but yeah, it's nowhere near. It's nowhere near. So, the Senate are obviously unhappy when they're told, no, I'm not coming down to the Senate House and helping you restore the Republic and and giving up any imperial claims. But nevertheless, there's, again, half a dozen or more sort of important men in the Senate, two or three that have got sort of legit claims to power. If there's anyone that's going to sort of lead the state, there's two or three of them that could. And they still sort of all start arguing amongst themselves. Like the next day they convene, but they don't decide anything concrete because they can't, particularly between them. Different men start putting themselves forward. Tom Holland said, just as Augustus and Tiberius had done before him, Claudius kept lamenting that he had no taste for supreme power, even while taking every step he could to secure it. One day into the restoration of the Republic, and already it was effectively dead.
So I don't blame Claudius for doing things that secure himself in such obviously dangerous situations. Like, it's evidently life or death.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so obviously life or death. If he puts a step wrong, someone's just going to shank him.
Yep.
So I don't blame him for just taking sense of, okay, well, I've got to do this or else someone's going to kill me. I've got to do that or else someone's going to kill me. I've got to accept the Praetorian Guard's allegiance or else they're going to kill me. I've got to kind of oppress the Senate or else they're going to kill me. You know, I've got to pay off these guys or else they're going to kill me. I've got to make sure the Germans understand that I'm the emperor or else they're going to kill everyone. So it's just like, I don't blame him at all for taking all of these actions.
You're absolutely right.
I don't find it in any way contradictory that he's just like, I just don't want to be the emperor. So yeah, but you just don't have a choice.
Yeah. There's a great bit in Robert Graves, completely fictionalized, of course, but where one of his close friends says to him, well, all exactly what you've just said, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, you've actually got no choice. And if you ever did, if you really want a republic one day, this is your best shot to be emperor for a while, at the very least.
Retire.
If you just sort of refuse to do it, there's three or four different factions that are going to chop you up and throw you in the Tiber. Today.
So it doesn't seem to me like incongruent or unlikely or contradictory that you can take all of these things while going, God, I wish I wasn't the emperor. I'd feel the same.
Yeah. And the Praetorians send word back to the Senate that, like, no, there's a new emperor. Don't think.
It's our boy Claudius.
Yeah.
The mighty conquering Claudius.
The all powerful.
The son of Jupiter.
Well, he'd never, ever been in the army, but his family were loved. The family of Germanicus. The family of Drusus and the brother of Germanicus. So Tom Holland said, through gritted teeth, senators who only the previous day had been talking in elevated tones about the restoration of liberty voted to entrust a man who most of them despised with the full bundle of powers lately wielded by Caligula.
Well, good for Claudius.
Some of the first things he does is there's a general amnesty for all the assassins, apart from one or two.
Right.
So the head of the Praetorians, Cassius Chaerea, he is assassinated. He's brought up on charges and executed because it becomes clear that his plan had been to kill him.
And it's also quite a smart play by Claudius. Like, no, you're all going to be fine. Apart from the guy who organized it. And that, okay, so they just turn up, well, you're bad luck, mate. You know, I'm safe. You're fucking, you know, not my problem.
Yeah.
You know, so...
I'm going to have a new head of the Praetorians who's loyal to me now that I trust, because I can't trust you.
Yeah. But that's a smart move. You know, general amnesty apart from that one guy.
Yeah, yeah. And they know some senators were in on the plot and he lets them go. He says just there's no more investigation into this. And what he says is that, yeah, you assassinated Caligula, but you also killed his wife and baby. Like, he had a 1 or 2 year old baby that they just dashed against a wall. They're like, well, for those murders, we've got to be executed.
Which is totally,
fairly legit. Yeah.
This is actually just.
Right. And he gives a massive donative, which I mentioned, to the Praetorians. Yeah. He even puts them on the reverse of some of his coins.
Really?
So historians, archaeologists say, look, he owes his power to them and he knows it. They know he knows it. Everyone knows it.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no question of it.
Right. Yeah.
Like, no one was debating that. They literally forced him to become the bloody emperor.
But like someone like Augustus, or even to a lesser extent Tiberius, their power relied on the army. But they sort of pretended it didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Their power, established by winning civil wars, undoubtedly relies on the army. But like underpinning it would have been a moral question of how the Empire, how the Republic, sorry, should have been. And, oh, I'm merely the first citizen. They're deeply in the fiction of it. You know, but everyone can see that it's actually, you know, you won the war.
And he's quite just. He sits in law, because even as a consul or a princeps, you're supposed to be a magistrate. You're supposed to be a judge in law cases.
Yep.
And he does quite a lot. And he's as just as he possibly can be. We are told that sometimes if a plaintiff or a defendant didn't turn up, he would just immediately find against them.
Wow. Lesson learned, didn't it?
Yeah. And sometimes he would make weird decisions, but he'd always reason out why he'd came to that decision.
Right, okay.
But he's trying. He wasn't being deliberately tyrannical.
He wasn't capricious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wasn't trying to humiliate or certainly not torture people or anything like that.
Mm. Well, that's good. I find myself more warming to Claudius than I was previously. And I quite liked Claudius prior, just because of the comical way that he was found behind the curtain. It's just comical. How can you not like this guy?
He does, yeah, right. It's kind of endearing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I mean, like Robert Graves in I, Claudius and Claudius the God paints him as just a completely well-meaning magic grandpa type figure.
Well, he kind of comes across that way, right?
Well, there are some things he does which are, to the modern mind and even to the Roman mind a bit, is still a bit cruel and unusual, but they're quite rare though, still. Right. Just nothing like Tiberius or Caligula. Hmm. Or Nero, who comes after him.
And considering how badly treated he'd been for his whole life,
it's
not unrealistic that he could have been like, right, I'm in charge now. Oh, everyone's in trouble.
Yeah. I think if you've been hard done by or put upon or beaten or anything like that, sometimes it makes you particularly cruel.
Mm.
And other times it makes you...
sensitive.
The opposite. Mm. It makes you realise how bad that really is.
Mm.
You know?
He's clearly in that camp.
Like some parents... if they're beaten when they were children, they swear off any sort of corporal punishment whatsoever. And others, it's just a perpetuating cycle.
Anyway,
Claudius is relatively benign.
Hmm.
One of the first things to mention about his administration is that he decides that the Senate is sort of sidelined in all sorts of ways by this point. And yet there is a de facto cult. He's still pretending to be a princeps, but his household of Caesar, is a cult in all but name, and it has to be run as such, really. And he uses freedmen, slaves and freedmen to do it. He has a meritocracy of a type. He knows people that are capable of the job and sets them to it. So famously, there's three freedmen, which are ex-slaves, Callistus, Pallas, and Narcissus. And they become the most powerful men in the empire, if you like, under him. Because in all sorts of ways, they run the imperial household. They run, they pick who gets to be consul, for example.
Yeah.
Right?
They're in charge of all of the administrative decisions.
Exactly, the administration.
Yeah. The sort of, the Stalin position.
Yeah, yeah. Callistus particularly, at least to begin with, the sources and modern historians talk about the secrets of power, the secrets of the Palatine, how the empire is really run. It's only a few people. They're usually slaves and freedmen of the Julio-Claudian family who are like completely loyal to the family. Anyway, Callistus emerges as sort of the top dog of those. He's at the very heart of power. Tom Holland says he's too shrewd, too knowledgeable, too valuable an ally to be cast aside. He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Caligula didn't bother with the business of government hardly at all. No. And it all still ticks along. In the generation after this, Nero does very little of the business of government. But the Roman Empire, if anything, flourishes even more because it's because competent freedmen run it behind the scenes.
Isn't that interesting, though? It's when there isn't a crazed emperor at the helm making insane decisions, things can actually work.
Yeah. Yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. ¡No esperes! Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.